Welcome to the Deep Dive. April 2025 has been quite a month for tech news, hasn't it? Especially in the network-attached storage space.
It really has. Lots of updates, new hardware. It's almost hard to keep track of everything.
Exactly. It feels like information overload sometimes.
Right.
But that's why we're doing this deep dive.
Right. We've sifted through it all. Software patches, big releases, even a bit of cybersecurity drama to pull out what you really need to know.
Yeah, our mission today is basically to cut through the noise, give you the key takeaways from all these sources, nice and quick.
Sounds good. Where should we start?
Let's kick things off with Synology. They've been busy pushing out updates for a bunch of their apps.
Okay, yeah, multiple updates at once, like NodeStation first.
Good place to start, version 2.6.6. The main thing here looks like security.
They upgraded the key derivation algorithm. So for encrypted notebooks, that's a real step up.
Right. Makes it tougher for brute force attacks trying to guess your keys.
Yeah.
You know, better protection.
Definitely. It's one of those behind the scenes things, but important. They also fixed some bugs like notes rendering weirdly and links not working right.
Yeah, usability fixes too. Always welcome. Okay, next up, Cloud Sync, version 2.7.2. This one seems packed.
It really is. Lots of different improvements. What jumps out at you?
Well, the synced task prioritization seems useful. You know, managing bandwidth better.
Totally. And for Mac users, that NFD character compatibility fix, that's a big one.
Oh, yeah. Tell me more about that.
Well, it solves those frustrating file name issues you sometimes get syncing between macOS and other systems. Should make things smoother.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. What else?
Performance boosts. They're saying better speeds with AWS S3, Azure, Backblaze B2. Several big names.
Any specific numbers?
Not everywhere, but faster sync is always good, right?
Yeah.
Especially for big backups.
True. And I saw some really specific rules for weird file names, like one starting with Windows or ending with a period.
Yeah. It's kind of funny how specific, but you know those came from real user problems. Attention to detail.
Definitely. And the Dropbox thing, archiving team spaces instead of deleting them, that's smart.
It is. A good data safety net prevents accidental loss. Plus, bug fixes for Microsoft and Google connections. More reliability.
Okay, solid update for Cloud Sync. Now, Synology Photos, version 1.8.0. This looks like a bigger deal.
Yeah, this one's interesting. Feels like they're pushing the NAS towards being more of an AI media hub.
How so?
Well, face tagging and item stacking.
Sure.
For organizing photos, that's huge. Makes finding stuff way easier.
Okay, like grouping similar shots or finding pictures of specific people.
Exactly. And manual thumbnail generation gives you more control, which some people like.
But the AI part, the object recognition.
Right. They've expanded support for that. Specific models listed by 86 ones, some AR ones like the DS423 Plus or DS223 if they have 2GB RAM.
So the NAS itself can identify objects in your photos now. On more models.
Precisely. It's bringing that AI smarts to more users. Plus, MIPI 9 video streaming support, which is, you know, a modern format.
Good for future-proofing. Though they noted issues with Safari.
Yeah, always some browser quirks. Oh, and custom login backgrounds. Nice little touch.
Huh, yeah. And the usual bug fixes 360 photos, ZIPs, Lightbox stuff. Seems thorough.
It does. Okay, last Synology app update. DS Finder.
Right, the mobile management tool. Version 2.5.4, this seems focused on the newer 25 series NAS units.
Mostly, yeah. Fixing inconsistencies in how drive status shows up between the app and the main DSM interface. Important for remote checks.
Makes sense. You want accurate info on the go.
And there's a TOS for those 25 series owners. Install just important updates automatically or all the latest updates. More control from your phone.
Convenient. Okay, that wraps up the Synology app blitz. Let's shift gears dramatically. TrueNAS.
Ah, yes. TrueNAS 25.04 Fangtooth. This is a big one.
The tagline says it all, right? TrueNAS Fangtooth is the unifier. Core and scale combined.
That's the headline. Merging the FreeBSD-based core and the Linux-based scale into one code base. It's a major architectural shift.
Wow. What does that mean for users, practically speaking?
Potentially wider hardware support from the Linux side, maybe a broader feature set eventually. But it's a big change. Let's see how stability holds up.
And it's built on the previous version, Electric Eel.
Yeah, 24.10. They're saying over 1,000 improvements and like 160 bug fixes baked into this first unified release.
That's substantial. What are the key upgrades?
Okay, Linux kernel 6.1. That means better support for newer hardware. Definitely.
Good.
What? Fast deduplication. They mentioned it helps cut costs for virtualization. Specifically on our high-end NVM models.
Interesting. Storage savings.
And get this, 5x acceleration for RAID Z expansion.
Five times faster. Seriously, anyone who's expanded a big array knows that pain. That's huge.
It really is. Big quality of life improvement there. Then there's virtualization, LXC containers, and KVM via Incus.
They're calling them instances, kind of like jails on a core.
Sort of the equivalent, yeah. But it brings more robust Linux-based virtualization options, including secure boot support. It's marked experimental for now, though.
Still, a clear direction. And configurable IP addresses for new apps.
Yeah, with existing apps getting it soon. More network control. Now, for the enterprise users, there's even more.
Okay, what's specific to the enterprise version?
GPOS DIG compliance. That's like government-grade security hardening. Very important for certain sectors.
Right, serious security.
And RDMA extensions, ISR and NFS over RDMA, they're claiming up to 50% lower latency and more IOPS for things like virtualization.
Whoa, that's a massive performance jump for demanding workloads.
Exactly. And 10x, faster ISCSI block cloning. Huge for VMware environments, cloning VMs much quicker.
10 times. Wow.
And similarly, fast file copy, promising a 10x speed up for SMB transfers. Again, aiming at enterprise workflows.
They're really targeting performance.
Definitely. Plus, fiber channel support now, alongside NVMe, makes it a more versatile SAN solution and easier file recovery for users with NFS access to snapshots.
So, a really powerful release, especially for businesses. But what's the advice for regular users?
They're still recommending the previous stable release. 24 point now, Sarah, 2.1 for most people. Fangtooth 25.4 is more for early adopters right now. Needs time to mature.
Okay, good advice. Caution is probably wise with such a big change. Right, moving on. Aishister's Surveillance Center 3.0 beta.
Yeah, a total revamp of their surveillance software. The big headline, it's completely cross-platform.
Meaning?
Runs in the browser, Chrome, Edge, Firefox, Safari. No more need for specific OS plugins or apps, which is, really convenient.
That is convenient. What about security?
They've added TLS 1.1 to 1.3 support and HTTPS. So, encrypted secure connections for your camera feeds. Much needed.
Good. And functionality.
Better PTZ control and real-time role-based access so you can control who sees what, and more recording options, motion, alarm, manual, scheduled, combined.
Sounds flexible. Camera compatibility.
They're claiming over 900 models, plus ONVIF support. And generic RTSP support too, so even unlisted cameras might work.
That's pretty broad.
Yeah, and three streaming modes to manage bandwidth. Plus, the iSecure mobile app works with it.
Okay, but it is a beta. Any catches?
Definitely. Some older features like maps and sequence views aren't there yet. No H.265 video in live view or playback for now due to browser limits. Some audio formats aren't supported either.
And it's not compatible with the old 2.x version, right? You have to uninstall that first.
Correct. So it's promising, but still very much beta software.
Yeah.
Worth testing if you're keen, but expect limitations.
Got it. Okay, let's shift focus completely now. Something concerning. The MITRE CVE program funding.
Yeah, this is potentially a big deal for cybersecurity overall. It's not NAS specific, but it affects everything.
Explain the CVE program first, quickly.
Sure. It's basically the dictionary of known cybersecurity vulnerabilities. Every vulnerability gets a unique CVE number. Security tools, databases, response teams, they all rely on this common language.
And Aidiri-Airi, who runs it, warned their funding expired.
That's the alert they put out, risk of disruption. Yousry Barsoom from Aidiri mentioned impacts on national vulnerability databases, security vendors, incident response, even critical infrastructure.
Wow. The potential ripple effect sounds massive.
It really could be. Gene Easterly, former CISA director, had that analogy.
Oh, the library one.
Yeah, losing the CVE system is like tearing out the card catalog from every library. Just chaos, losing that shared index of threats.
That paints a picture. And others are worried too.
Casey Ellis from BugCrowd called it a potential national security problem. It's that fundamental.
Is anything being done?
CISA acknowledged the contract lapse. They say they're working urgently to mitigate the impact and keep CVE services running. But, the fact that it got to this point.
Yeah, it raises questions, especially with NIST-NVD having its own backlog issues recently. Seems like vulnerability management infrastructure is under strain.
It does. Definitely something to watch. Okay, pivoting back to Synology. A different kind of news this time, a bit controversial.
The hard drive compatibility change for the new 2025 plus series NAS models.
That's the one. It's caused quite a stir in the community.
So, what's the change exactly?
Basically, starting with those 2025 plus models, you'll only get full functionality if you use Synology's own branded drives, or specific third-party ones they've certified.
Full functionality. What gets restricted if you use, say, a standard drive you bought yourself?
Quite a bit, actually. You wouldn't be able to create storage pools with non-certified drives. Volume-wide deduplication. Nope. Drive lifespan analysis features. Gone. Automatic drive firmware updates. Also out.
Wow. That's significant. And maybe limit support, too?
Yeah, they mentioned potential limitations on official support if you run into problems with unlisted drives.
What's Synology's reasoning?
They talk about improving system reliability, making firmware and security updates easier, reducing compatibility headaches, you know, the benefits of a tightly controlled ecosystem.
Okay, I can see that argument.
But it's hard not to see the commercial side, too, right? It pushes people towards buying their drives, which might be pricier.
Mm-hmm.
Vendor locking concerns.
Yeah, that's definitely the vibe from the community reaction I've seen. People aren't happy.
Understandably. Frustration, talk of looking at QNAP or open source alternatives, even newcomers like Ugreen. It feels like a step away from user choice.
Is there any good news? What about existing drives or older models?
Okay, yeah. Migrating drives from older Synology models, pre-2025 ones, into the new ones, that will still work without these restrictions, and older Plus models aren't affected at all.
So if you have an older NAS, you're fine for now. And basic functions still work on the new ones with non-certified drives?
Right. It'll still function as a NAS, store files, etc., but you lose those advanced features and potentially support. It's a feature reduction, essentially.
Hmm. Okay. Definitely a controversial move. Let's switch to QNAP hardware.
Ah.
The ES1686DCR2.
Right. This is an enterprise box. High availability is the name of the game here.
Dual controllers?
Yep. Dual active controllers.
Yeah.
Means if one fails, the other takes over instantly. Zero downtime, basically. Crucial for mission critical stuff.
Makes sense. And it runs their ZFS-based OS.
QES V2.2, yeah. Supports Fiber Channel SAN, NFS 4.1, standard enterprise protocols. ZFS brings those data integrity features.
And hardware specs. Looks beefy.
Oh, yeah. 16 SAS bays, 12 QBAMEs, 4 10GBE SFP plus ports per controller, PCIe slots for expansion. It's built for performance and redundancy.
What about enterprise software features?
All the good stuff. Online dedupants compression, self-healing file system, tons of snapshots, SnapSync for disaster recovery.
NVRAM too, for power loss protection.
Yep, protects data in flight if the power cuts out. Plus ICER support for VMware, compatibility with VMware SRM and VDI.
Oh,
it ticks all the enterprise boxes.
And expandable storage.
Massively. You can add SAS JBODs to get into petabyte territory. Different CPU RAM options available too. It's a serious enterprise machine.
Okay. Now for something completely different again, a docking station, the CalDigit TS5 Plus, Thunderbolt 5.
Whoa, Thunderbolt 5 already. Yeah, this thing looks like a connectivity monster.
Yeah.
Due out late April or May, they say.
How many ports?
20, a full 20 ports.
And
Thunderbolt 5 means bandwidth up to 120 gigabits per second total. That's a lot.
What can you do with all that bandwidth?
Well, drive up to 3 external monitors if you're on a Windows machine with Thunderbolt 5. Deliver 140 watts of power to charge your laptop.
140W, that'll handle pretty much any laptop.
Absolutely. Plus, built-in 10 gigabit Ethernet. And get this, 64G brings PCIe bandwidth for external SSDs. That's insanely fast.
So super fast external storage.
Yeah, it speeds up to like 6,200 megabytes per second potentially. They also put in dual USB controllers.
Why dual controllers?
More bandwidth for your USB devices. If you plug in multiple high-speed things, they won't bottleneck each other as easily. Smart design.
Okay. Any other standout ports?
High-power USB-C on the front, 36 watts. And the downstream Thunderbolt 5 ports also deliver 36W. Good for charging tablets or phones quickly. SD and microSD slots too, UHS too.
Essential for creatives, compatibility.
Works with various Thunderbolt and USB 4 versions. But not Thunderbolt 3 Windows PCs, that's a keynote. It maintains that 140W laptop charging even when loaded up.
And the design, vertical or horizontal?
Both. Versatile placement. They clarify monitor support details for Mac and Windows too. You need that specific Thunderbolt 5 host on Windows for triple displays.
And the 10 gig Ethernet is confirmed?
Yep. Plus it works with Thunderbolt iPads and Windows tablets, though functionality depends on the tablet itself.
Sounds like the ultimate dock. If you have a Thunderbolt 5 machine ready.
Pretty much. Okay, shifting back to storage, but for high-performance computing, in Fortrend Eon Store GSX.
Right, aimed at AI and HPC workloads. What's special here?
They offer both NVMe all-flash and high-capacity SAS HDD models. Performance is key, up to 43 gigabytes per second from one unit.
43 gigabits? That's flying.
And they cluster. You can link up to 10 of them. And performance scales linearly, so potentially over 400 gigabits in a cluster.
Wow. How do they manage that?
A key thing is they've integrated the parallel file system logic into the storage appliance itself. No need for separate metadata servers.
Ah, saves rack space and complexity.
Exactly. And native support for Linux and Windows clients. No extra client software needed. It's designed for massive data, super high throughput.
Makes sense for those specific AI HPC use cases. Okay, one last piece of news. On the cybersecurity front again, but positive this time, TP-Link.
Oh, yeah. They've become a CVE numbering authority, a CNA.
What does that mean, practically?
It means TP-Link can now officially assign CVE ID numbers to vulnerabilities found in their own product.
So they don't have to go through AMIRE or another CNA.
Right. It speeds up the process of identifying, tracking, and disclosing vulnerabilities, shows a stronger commitment to security, more transparency.
And helps them fix things faster.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
They tie it to their Secure by Design efforts and CISA partnerships. It puts them alongside other big tech companies taking direct responsibility.
That feels like a good development, more accountability.
Like definitely a positive step for them and their customers.
Okay, so that's a wrap on the specific updates. We covered a lot of ground there.
We really did. From Synology's app tweaks and TrueNAS unification.
To the Asistera beta, the critical CVE funding issue, Synology's drive policy.
New enterprise gear from QNAP and Infortran, that powerful CalDigit doc, and TP-Link stepping up as a CNA.
Yeah, quite the range. Hopefully this deep dive gave everyone a clear, concise overview of what's been happening.
That was the goal. Cut through the noise, highlight what matters.
So as we finish up, maybe something to think about. This Synology drive policy, and even the TrueNAS unification in a way, it brings up that tension, doesn't it, between, you know, tightly controlled vendor ecosystems and user freedom or flexibility.
It really does. How much convenience are you willing to trade for choice? Or maybe how much reliability comes from that tighter integration versus the potential downsides of lock-in?
And the CVE funding scare. It's a reminder of all that invisible infrastructure that keeps our digital world, well, somewhat stable. We often don't see it until it's threatened.
Exactly. Things we take for granted, but are actually critical. Hopefully listeners have a better sense now of some of those forces shaping the tech they use every day, and maybe what questions to ask when making their own choices.